From NPR Music, this is Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras.
And I'm Jasmine Garst. As you know, we occasionally love to invite artists to join us on our show as guest DJs.
And today we are very fortunate to have Mexican-American vocalist and songwriter and Latin Grammy winner Lila Downs with us.
She's taken some time off from her very busy schedule as she tours with her great new record. It's called Pecados y Milagros. And she's joining us now from the NPR Bureau in New York to talk about her music, her life, and, of course, what she's listening to these days.
So, Lila, thank you so much for joining us.
Hello, ¿cómo están? It's great to be here.
Todo bien, gracias. You know, the list of your songs you brought in seems to tell your life story through music. So let's get right into the music. What song do you want to start with?
Well, I guess Blue and Green would be a great place to begin.
Blue and Green from Miles Davis.
That's a really beautiful song. Tell us why you chose this, and where did you first come into contact with Miles Davis?
Yeah, well, my father was a great jazz lover, and he retired in the 70s, and then I had been going to school both back and forth between Minnesota and Oaxaca, but when he retired, we kind of settled in Oaxaca in a little village, and he would invite people over and play these albums. He would play Thelonious Monk, mostly jazz, Ella Fitzgerald, Sarah Vaughan, and this is the album that I grew up listening to. And I, right now when I was listening to it, I was thinking about how every note that's played by Miles and then later on Coltrane is it means something, and I think that it taught me. It was my first lesson about what I would continue to do for the rest of my life.
The idea of Miles and Monk in a small Oaxacan village, you know, it just makes the world a much better place.
Yeah.
About how old were you back then when this was going on?
I was really young. I think my mother says I started singing when I was around 5, and I would be around 7.
That's interesting. I didn't know that your dad was a jazz lover, and he was a jazz musician. I've read several of your biographies in which it talks about your mother being, correct me if I'm wrong, but several of your biographies talk about your mother being a Mixtec cabaret singer, is that correct?
She was a singer. She doesn't like the word cabaret, but she says it was a cafeteria.
I was just wondering what kind of music that exposed you to.
Yeah, of course. That was the what we would call the profane in Mexico would be rancheras, which are the country songs that speak about evildoers and outlaws and love, really, passion. It would be kind of like the blues is to the U.S.
Like which singers do you remember hearing?
Well, my mother would listen to Lucha Reyes, Lola Beltrán, a bit of Chavela Vargas, Pedro Infante, Jorge Negrete.
All the classics.
Miguel Aceves Mejía, yeah.
You know, I want to go back to the Miles Davis thing. I'm hoping that someday my kids say the same thing because I love Miles Davis, and I know that they can now recognize Miles within two or three notes, I'm proud to say. But yeah, they still say they hate jazz, but they know Miles Davis.
Right. I don't think I really realized how jazz made such an imprint on my life until much later. And that was when, of course, I had finally decided to dedicate my life to music. And that had a lot to do with Mercedes Sosa, which is the next singer on the playlist. And she was, this miraculous voice that I discovered when I was studying anthropology. I was studying symbolism of textiles that are woven by Indian women in southern Mexico.
Well, let's go ahead and listen to Gracias a la Vida, or I Give Thanks to Life.
Gracias a la vida, me ha dado tanto, me dio dos luceros, que cuando los abro, perfecto distingo lo negro del blanco, y en el alto cielo, su fondo estrellado. Y en las multitudes, el hombre que yo amo. Gracias a la vida que me ha dado tanto, me ha dado el sonido y el abecedario, con las palabras que pienso y declaro, madre, amigo, hermano, y luz alumbrando la ruta del alma del que estoy amando.
I've been reading, and you know, I think a lot of us can identify with some of the stuff you say about growing up and rejecting traditional music and your identity a little bit in favor of something else. You came to Mercedes Sosa a little bit later in life, right?
Yes, I did. I did. I discovered her much later, and really was very surprised by the enormous instrument that she was, that she continues to be in her memories. And but mainly, I think that she was singing with a cause. That's what really motivated me to change the direction of the artistic things I was thinking about.
What were you doing before, and how was it different than your music after hearing Mercedes Sosa?
Well, I guess that I grew up singing to traditional Mexican music and really identifying with the musical aspects of it. But I didn't agree with a lot of the kind of machista messages and also some of the messages that were dated to me. You know, they were about cowboys and horses and and the revolution. And I couldn't relate to those things. When you're little. I think that also pop music and the music that I heard when I would come to the U.S. or I remember listening to Linda Ronstadt and Melissa Etheridge, I remember listening to Santana later on, and Jimi Hendrix, and these influences were, it was like, how am I going to work this into our, into what I want to say? And that was a very difficult thing to imagine, partly because our cultures are so different, the language is so different. There is this kind of rejection within yourself. For me, in my case, it was rejection of being Mexican, rejection of being Indian. I was in denial of that, I think, at one point. And so music really kind of helped me unravel this whole story and come closer to my roots and accept myself. I'm still working on it.
Well, Felix and I were, as we prepared for today's show, Felix and I were talking about, you know, what it means to be Hispanic today and what it means to be of mixed heritage, which you are. Your father is from the U.S. and your mother is indigenous from Mexico. And I know a lot of people, and I include myself in that statement, that grapple with what that means. And there's a lot of guilt and confusion. And because you've made this so much part of your art, I wanted to ask you, do you think it's gotten easier?
I think it's easier in some way to be of varied origin, of mixed origin. It's also more acceptable now than, and also there's more of us, right? So right. It's just one of those things that people can relate to better, but it's still a cultural difference, that it's like a cultural wall that we have between languages, and it's there are historical reasons for that, and I imagine similar to what happens between England and France. There are these, you know, we were enemies in the past, and
right.
So in a deep subconscious level, we are enemies until we die.
Wow. Yeah.
And there's that element that is something that I think we all struggle with. But that's why music is so beautiful, because you can delve in these things in some weird, emotional, strange way, and you can come to the table, or come go on the stage and perform and exercise many of these emotions that you're going through.
Yeah, I would think that, I mean, especially with Miles Davis, you played one that cut, for those people who don't know, is from the album Kind of Blue. And you know, that album in particular, I remember very distinctly being able to appreciate that, the profound subtlety of that album, just about the same time that I appreciated the same qualities in boleros. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Because like it, you know, when you're talking about this bicultural existence and where it comes from, you know, those two examples kind of get right to the point. It's like it's more an internal, something internal that you have to recognize. And then you see things for what they have in common.
Yes, and it's also, in my case, it's about rural versus the city. And I am a rural girl. I grew up, you know, near the farms, and my grandmother was a campesina, a woman who didn't read or write, who spoke her native Indian language first. So I grew up with this kind of poetic imagery of simplicity and being close to the land and the rotting of the leaves, feeding the death, and then out of the death comes the new seed of life and the corn and these images. And then and then as you move to the city, you turn your back kind of on those elements, and you become more sophisticated, and also your needs become more sophisticated. And so that's fascinating to me. Musically, I think each album that we have worked on has kind of questioned these elements and also the instruments that represent the urban dweller versus the country folk.
What song do you want to play next?
Let me think. Well, I guess Lola Beltran is a very important influence in the earlier part of my life, and I think she always comes in and out of it. And I guess I would like to say that she is one of the stronger musical forces.
This is Paloma Negra from Lola Beltran.
Cielito, ¿qué me hiciste? Ya me canso de llorar y no amanece. Ya no sé si maldecirte o por ti rezar. Tengo miedo de buscarte y de encontrarte. ¿Dónde me aseguran mis amigos que te vas? Hay momentos en que quisiera mejor rajarme para arrancarme ya los clavos de mi pena. Pero mis ojos...
Just like that tragic, how do you say, desgarrado? Dislocated almost from anguish in that voice, right?
Yes, yes. I think that it's about crying. It's a lot of these songs, the same way that country, I think, is that way in the U.S. Or the blues. It's about just letting go of yourself and your emotion, and that's what the songs are a lot about most of the time. And also about drinking.
The writer Alma Guillermo Prieto once wrote a great line. She says, "It's not a Mexican party until someone starts crying."
That's right. That's wonderful.
Ya no vuelvo. Paloma negra, eres la reja de un penal. Quiero ser libre, vivir mi vida con quien me quiera. Dios, dame fuerzas, que estoy muriendo por irla a buscar. Ya agarraste por tu cuenta las parrandas.
Well, next up, you brought something by Bob Dylan.
Yes.
Masters of War. Do you want to tell me a little bit about that song?
Yes, this is also an album that my father listened to a lot, and we would sit and kind of analyze the lyrics, and he was into that. And I think it's a very influential song for me because later on when I write about the border, we did an album called Border, La Línea. The album is dedicated to all the subjects of the border, some of them traditional, some of them traditionally about critical, criticizing, you know, the outlaw and what it represents in our society. So I think he is certainly an example for so many of us who write songs about having passion for your ideals and trying to get that on the paper and then in the music with some force, you know, so that it speaks to people.
Come, you masters of war, you that build the big guns, you that build the death planes, you that build all the bombs, you that hide behind walls, you that hide behind discs. I just don't want you to know I can see through your masks. you that never done nothing but build to destroy. You play with my world like it's your little toy. You put a gun in my hand and you hide from my eyes. And you turn and run farther when the fast bullets fly.
Sounds just as relevant today as it did back then.
Yeah, it's about looking for truth, right? Where is the truth today?
You know, and I've always considered Bob Dylan, you know, I don't see a difference between Bob Dylan, Mercedes Sosa, Victor Jara, Silvio Rodriguez. You know, they're all of this, they're cut from the same cloth.
Well, I think societies have a need for this kind of music. At times, I guess we also need bubblegum.
Right?
We asked that question earlier. We posed the question to listeners, what young new artists are coming up in that tradition of who's out there speaking truth to power through music? And I was wondering who you see as taking that on themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is a kind of a roots movement that's happening in Mexico and I think in all of Latin America with, you know, a new generation of people who are creating and writing songs. Maybe they're not explicitly as political as it was, you know, the fashion of the day. And I don't know if maybe we're not to that point yet where you can say certain things. Certainly hip-hop says it. It's right in your face. And but then there's a lot of contradictions in the hip-hop community. So
yeah.
Once in a while, you do run into the real thing, though, and it's very amazing to hear. It's very moving.
In fact, you did bring some hip-hop to share with us.
I did, yeah, some hip-hop that's made an impression on me and my life. And we have had the privilege of working with all kinds of Latin American musicians. But firstly, we work with an amazing Cuban producer in Mexico who's lived there for over 10 years, and he's kind of like our family, you know. His name is Aneiro Taño, and I guess that the Cuban family is just, I feel like we are brothers. You know, Mexico and Cuba has had such a wonderful relationship over the years and a very nurturing one. And a band that is based, I believe, in Paris still, if I'm not wrong. Some of them, I became familiar with them when we were touring in Europe, in Spain, and their name is Orishas. And I just love the singing, the sense of rhythm, of course, which the Cubans are masters at. And the things that they say are amazing.
This is probably the most popular track from that debut album that they put out. This is called A Lo Cubano.
No, a lo cubano, directamente de Panam, de París para ser exacto, de Chehuam, donde están los de la nueva generación. Son y mira, ponte en el fuego de la acción, con presión de la lírica, mística, psíquica. La rumba ha comenzado con Anga, Flaco Pro, el negro Yoruba, hijo de Guá, Candelá. Escucha cómo suena, no hay más nada. Sonido fuerte, ardiente y pegajoso. Sinceroso, te destrozo. Mi flow que calma sin fatiga a los nerviosos. Con mi conexión, controlando bien mi lengua. Pegado hasta el techo, quiero que lo entiendas. Seguir. Yo represento Romulata Cuba hasta el fin. Mi oricha como un imperio voy a construir. Yo hoy te dejo mi tema como mi emblema se finí.
No, no te vayas.
Dirigiendo dicha el mundo pa' la valla. De oriente hasta occidente gritamos a la batalla. Mi gente entalla y toma el jack que te desmaya. Y te me callas.
Ya te lo digo el guerrero. Ruso, flaco, rey Roldán. De banana, kibicán. Con un estilo rumbero. Hay que quitarse el
You know, I'm always amazed with, after hearing this, I was living in Miami at the time when this came out, and I'm always amazed at how perfect a fit some of these hip-hop beats are with the Afro-Cuban tradition.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like it was made for it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, well, they work at it, though, and it's amazing. It's amazing what they accomplish. Yeah.
Rhythmically, it's like they're long-lost family members.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. Same family. Same family.
And moving that forward, I mean, there's still quite of a... there's still quite a hip-hop movement there in Cuba, but, you know, it's I've heard stuff mixed in with bata rhythms and, you know, all of that. When you listen and when these guys made an impression on you, what were the things that really stood out to you?
I would say that musically it just is very strong. So I think that as a Latin American, I think that's one of... the beauties of being a Latin American in the U.S. is that you can define yourself in so many ways. You have your particular country identity, but then you also are a part of this huger family, which is Latin America. And we are brothers and sisters in this country. And I think you truly feel that camaraderie when you live in this country. And it's a gift. And I think that's what... it's about it. I remember them really influencing our work, especially on that album, on the Border album. I think we had some influences from Orishas, and as well as other people like Rochelle Farrell, who we admire and love very much. And when we were living in Philadelphia, she was someone that I really looked up to and admired, as well as people like Whitney Houston, who are amazing singers and amazing instruments that have left us a great gift.
This is the jazz standard Autumn Leaves by the vocalist Rochelle Farrell. That's the Miles Davis, I mean the Cannonball Adderley,
right? Yeah.
That's something else. We were listening to the same music at the same time, weren't we?
Yeah, really. Huh? Yes. Some of your past music, I mean, were some of your songs written? Do you have a particular memory of writing a particular song that you felt where all the elements came together, the things you just described? Yeah, I think that I prefer certain songs. I think also you don't even need to judge yourself that much, because usually the audience just kind of decides. And the music speaks for itself, you know, and the songs that have been most popular, I think, are the better songs. There's a song called Digna, which I wrote dedicated to the disappeared women in Mexico, and specifically about a lawyer who was fighting for human rights in Guerrero, and she got killed. And there's always this discussion whether she committed suicide or didn't, you know, in the official story, and it still continues to be the same. So this song has stood out, and people ask for it constantly at the concerts.
Now, genre-wise, I'm interested by when you do something like rap, for example, which is, I mean, it's not what you've always done. How do you approach that? Are you tentative about it? For example, yeah. I'm thinking of your last album in which you were with one of my favorite rap groups, Ilia Curiaki and the Valderramas.
I discovered that by performing constantly, you can come in contact with really anything. Musical is acceptable and a wonderful exercise. And I think that is the true jazz philosophy. It's not about the word jazz and I think it's about this, you know, all-encompassing idea and notion that tapping a pen on the table is music and really taking from everything. And so when I discovered that I could start singing the standards at the clubs that I was performing at, and people just loved it and would sometimes sing with me, and I think my scope became wider and wider, and I think I have had the need to look to new music that I'm not as familiar with, but that I want to learn from. Like I remember, I was into a phase with Fela Kuti and Omo Sangare and Richard Bona and the influences and the things that I've learned in vocal production and drumming, all these different things. It's amazing. Been able to work with some of these musicians too. It's just a privilege.
Next up, you brought a female vocalist that is really one of my personal favorites. You brought Nina Simone.
Nina is someone who is very influential for me, but only more recently, maybe in the last 15 years. And I think that I knew of her existence, but I knew of only certain songs that were more like the covers that she used to do. And so when I discovered her songs, I was like, oh my God. You know, this lady is, she's bad.
she's bad,
and,
that's for sure.
And so, yeah, one of my favorite songs is this Four Women. It's just, it has been so influential in my songwriting.
Well, here we go. This is Nina Simone's Four Women.
Black, my arms are long, my hair is woolly, my back is strong enough to take the pain inflicted again and again. What do they call me? My name is Aunt Sarah. My name is Aunt Sarah. Aunt Sarah. Skin is yellow, my hair is long, between two worlds I do belong. My father was rich and white, he forced my mother late. What do they call me? My name is Sophronia. My name is Sophronia.
It's that same, you know, when I use the word desgarrador, you know, desgarrador, mm-hmm. like just anguished to the point of being raw, and she has that same power. It's mm-hmm. Nina Simone is just amazing, and it, you know, you might not see the parallel with Lola Beltran, but I definitely think they're both. They have this rawness, this realness. Mm-hmm. They're mm-hmm. like you said, they're bad.
Yeah,
In that scheme of things, you know, where do you put your own voice? I mean, do you feel like you're a ranchera singer? Do you feel like you're a blues singer? You know, how do you, in your own mind's eye, consider your own voice?
Are you bad?
Some people say that about me. I think I'm the good girl who always kind of had to repress herself, you know, about being good, and so that created some kind of a monster inside. and this monster appears in different forms on the stage sometimes, and people like to see it. And I think it's about telling truths and sometimes laughing at yourself, and that's fun. And it's also hard sometimes to accept certain truths about yourself.
My manner is tough.
You know, I always wonder about that, like with women that, again, that I feel are just badasses. I always wonder, like someone like Lola Bertran or Nina Simone. I just wonder, you know, was she like that when she was 5 years old or 10 years old? I mean, when did she become this powerful, fierce? And when did you, Lila, just get that, you know, did something happen or did you see someone on stage? Was there this pivotal moment that you just came,
yes,
this
there was.
Came out?
There was something very strong that I tell a lot of times Mexicans, we have a very conservative approach towards, you know, telling our story. and sometimes I just come out and I say, you know, I had a terrible experience. When I was 16, there was a man in my village who thought he would bring me down by, you know, this is like going back in medieval times, but right. But in Mexico, this is the reality of women. And there was a boyfriend that I had that when my father passed, he just thought that he could talk, you know, really evil about me and say all these evil things, and that everyone was going to stop talking to me. And eventually they did. People stopped talking to my mother and to myself. And I thought, what is this? How can it be that a man's word can have this effect over a society towards women? And I took the case to a judge, and I did a legal suit against this guy. And I won. And I was 16.
Like for defamation?
Yes, exactly. For lying about this. And I got me my, you know, my witnesses. And so I learned at an early age that I had to defend myself. And I think that's why I believe in education. And I believe that women need to have more opportunities, especially those women who don't have the privileges that I happen to have in my life. And I really, I guess I'm very strong about that, and I will never, you know, people will not bring me down on that. So I think that is one of the big things that made my life change.
Well, next up we have Laza de Cela, another favorite of ours. This is El Payande. Is that right?
Yeah, El Payande.
Mm-hmm. Payande. You'll have to, I'm trying really hard not to say El Payande.
Yeah.
So Laza de Cela had a lot of parallels between her life and yours. And did you know her? Did you work with her?
Yes, I did know her. I was fortunate enough to have met her here in New York when she did a show at the Bowery Ballroom, I remember. We hung out and we had heard of each other, you know, many years before that and weren't able to get together until then. And I think we were hoping to work together this year, actually. So it was very, very sad when we found out about her passing last year. It was very sad to lose someone so talented.
Okay, Lila, next you have a musician whose name I've seen on Latin music blogs recently, Celso Piña. He's an accordion player based in Monterrey, Mexico. Can you tell us a little more about him?
Well, he's an amazing man. He's from the barrio in Monterrey, from one of the legendary, you know, communities in the city. And they're known to be very fierce people. And he's just the coolest cat, you know. He hangs out and he supports, and we've invited him to various events, and he's always there. And, you know, don't worry about the money, it's no problem, you know, we're here, we're supporting. He's just one of those guys that is amazing. And musically, he just loves to get the people up off their butts and dance. And I love that about him. He's a great guy. And, of course, the influence of the cumbia. You know, in Mexico, there are so many kinds of cumbias that we have adopted from Colombian, and his style is vallenato, like a certain region of Colombia. And he, as well as Totó la Momposina, have been great people to collaborate with in terms of also the black root and kind of our tribute to that root in Mexico, which in the national culture we tend to forget to pay tribute to, but which is a very real and a presence in the music.
Okay, let's hear from him. This is Cumbia Sobre el Río from Celso Piña.
¡Siga cabalgando!
so much for stopping by today.
Thank you for having me.
It's been very interesting, and I gotta say, personally, it's been very thought-provoking for me personally, because we have very similar musical taste, and I was born on this side of the border, but the influences are still there, so thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
Listeners can't see, but Felix has been sporting a ear-to-ear grin the whole time.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Remember, you can hear these songs in their entirety on our website. That's npr.org/altlatino.
And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Special thanks to our producers, Jessica Goldstein and Mike Katzeff.
I'm Jasmine Garst.
And I'm Felix Contreras. This has been Alt Latino. Thank you very much, Lila. And what song are we going to go out on?
Thank you. Well, I love this band called Beirut. And they did a collaboration with a Zapotec Indian band from Oaxaca, from the valley. And I just love what they come up with.
I just love what Beirut is doing. I mean, because they definitely have a very indie appeal, you know, Beirut.
Yeah.
But then they really seem to love to do these collaborations with Latin
beautiful.
Music. We played them recently for, they were on the Red Hot in Rio album, covering Caetano Veloso's Oleozinho, and
oh,
it's just stunning, and just, it's a really great band. I really appreciate what they're doing.
Okay, let's hear it. This is called The Acará.